This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver
Commercial
Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. I'm Lurch.
Lurch? You are, what is the with your voice? God,
I don't know.
You sound like you're dying. You used to come in, and I think it was different, and I'm Adam Scalina, by the way.
But yeah.
You used to come into this podcast when we first started it. I think your kids were a little bit younger and maybe probably carrying more viruses around.
Yeah.
But you'd be sick like every second week.
Yeah.
Also like kind of around the COVID moment there too.
Yeah, well,
you're kind of always patient zero, and now we're kind of back to those days.
Yeah, well, it's like I had this fever that I can't remember last
how
time.
How recently was this?
I don't know.
Last night.
Yeah, last night in the contagious stage, I think.
Yeah.
So I had this fever, and it just like knocked me on my you know what for a couple of days, and I can't remember the last time I missed work because I was ill, and it was like back to like the COVID days, and yeah, it knocked me on my butt. It was bad. I feel way better now. I just don't sound great, but I feel great. But yeah, don't disregard the bird beak or anything like that that's growing on my face. It's not the bird influenza. You'll be okay. Yeah. As we're in a small 6 by 6 foot space with no windows,
with no airflow whatsoever. Sure. I know.
Swapping spit.
As yeah, we talk. This is brutal. We'll make this quick. But we've got Spencer Welton. He's the senior VP of development at Grand Peaks. And Scott Glazebrook, he's an architect, partner, VP at Tiscareno. These guys are both, they're forces in the Seattle kind of area.
Absolutely. Very lucky to have them.
Doing a lot of development on the West Coast. And today's an interesting conversation because we're talking about multifamily and design principles in the area, the relationship to Vancouver, their thoughts on Vancouver, some of the differences between the markets, where the opportunities are in Seattle. So it's a different take than we've had recently.
Yeah.
So it's a fantastic episode. So stick around for that. And without further ado, Cor.
Yeah, let's get to the episode because I got no voice.
Can't wait.
This podcast is presented by Impact Commercial.
Impact Commercial. John, Alan, the team over there are fantastic. They've all been on the show.
They have,
friends of the show.
Great guys.
Wealth of experience. They can help with all your commercial financing needs.
Whether it's owner-occupiers, land development funds, commercial investments, or multifamily, these guys got you covered.
And they recently obtained their CMHC correspondent lender status.
So for all your commercial lending needs, visit them at impactcommercial.ca.
That's impactcommercial.ca.
Okay, so we're here with Spencer Welton. He's the Senior VP of Development at Grand Peaks, and Scott Glazebrook. He is an architect and partner and VP at Tiscareno Associates. How are you both doing today?
Doing great. Thanks for having us.
Doing very good. Thank you.
Thanks so much for taking the time today. Maybe starting with Spencer, can you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so I've been active in commercial real estate for over 25 years, at this point, almost exclusively in the multifamily housing space. I've been in Seattle for about 15 of those years, done projects with Grand Peaks from California up to Kelowna, British Columbia, actually. Prior to that, I was in Boston for about 10 years, kind of working on multifamily there as well in the northeast part of the country. And currently we're working on a couple projects with Tiscareno, one up in Linwood, about 326 units, and second one in planning in a town called Shoreline.
Great. And Scott, how about you?
Yeah, I've been an architect for about 30 years. Took a two-year hiatus and was a city planner in downtown San Diego. Most of my career was actually in California. Been in Seattle for about 9 years, all those years at Tiscareno. About half my career in the multifamily mixed-use area. The other half has been a combination of institutional, public work, transit, commercial, et cetera.
Wow. And San Diego, what a city to be a planner in. That's that sounds amazing.
Sounds like a whole nother episode.
maybe kind of to jump things off, we're just, you know, we're obviously Vancouver and Seattle are two West Coast cities that often get compared to each other, at least by Canadians on this side. What do you see as some of the biggest differences about working in both cities?
Well, I think, you know, speaking kind of from a planning perspective, perhaps, you know, one of the things I think that's a little interesting is kind of how both cities have evolved over time. You know, I think Vancouver seems to have done a better job of really kind of facilitating neighborhoods in its downtown core, as well as kind of facilitating, you know, a more diverse set of housing types out in its kind of the suburban areas as well. You know, I think one of the things that when you look at Seattle from a planning perspective, I'm not sure exactly this is what you were trying to get at, but yeah, I think, you know, Seattle kind of evolved with a core that was really business focused. It was office focused, and the neighborhoods were very much residential focused without kind of any overlap between the two. Over time, I think you've seen that shift quite a bit. We've seen more and more housing kind of pulling into downtown and in the neighborhoods. But I think one of the problems with Seattle right now is that the neighborhoods still, you know, where the jobs are is still core Seattle or perhaps in the Bellevue area or business core areas. And, we're still very much a commuter city in that way, where I think Vancouver seems to have done a little bit better of a job of kind of implementing a planning process that really kind of has woven those functions a little bit better together. And at least that's kind of maybe from an outsider's perspective, that's what I see when I kind of come up to Vancouver.
Well, I think one question too that obviously is a challenge up here has obviously been like the rental markets, all the rental restrictions that we have that are put on by local governments, all the red tape to get things built. A lot of people have obviously compared Vancouver to Seattle with regards to proximity and livability. What does Seattle have from a rental standpoint that maybe has allowed it to look like it's fostered and grown better and with less challenges maybe than we currently still feel like we experience up here in Vancouver?
One thing I think that we can point to a little bit is I think there's a lot less for sale product being built in Seattle. The vast majority of housing is for rent. So I think it's a little bit different than the Vancouver market. And then I think that just leads to a lot more interest or some more development in the rental market. Beyond that, I don't really know. Spencer, do you have any insights into that?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of, I think you mentioned sort of process a little bit and then getting things approved. You know, I think, yeah, I can't really speak too much to how Vancouver looks at process from an environmental review perspective or a design review perspective. You know, but we have, the process here is fairly onerous to create more housing. Yeah, I think we've done a couple things. We're moving in the direction of doing a couple things right now that are kind of facilitating more housing. One of them is, you know, actually this came down straight from the governor, is to exempt housing from the Environmental Policy Act, the State Environmental Policy Act. That's helped to for any project that has at least one unit of housing or more in the city of Seattle. So I think that's kind of helped expedite the process a little bit. Yeah, and then of course there's also some discussion of really design review changes that are looking to be implemented probably sometime later this year. That's going to help facilitate that process or, you know, expedite that process a little bit more. And then on top of that, there's also a bunch of upzoning that's happening kind of in core areas. So I think, you know, there's clearly a big need for more housing closer in. And I think the state and the city have both been taking action to, you know, make that process a little bit simpler so we can actually produce that housing at a faster pace.
Like one of the things that I think Vancouver now, there's a huge push to build purpose-built rental. And I know we almost look at Seattle as, wow, the city's done an incredible job of building enough purpose-built rental. And so are you still seeing an emphasis on purpose-built rental? Is it still pushing in that direction, or have you seen a balancing out of strata and rental options?
Yeah, I think one of the problems we have in this country is that when we talk about strata or condominium type deals here, there is a legal environment that's really difficult to contend with. And so there's a lot of developers that really just won't touch that type of development. It just too litigious and it becomes a problem. And I think the sad thing about that is that it's really cut out a kind of sort of a set, subset of housing that's really needed right now. When we have nothing but, you know, 80% of, I think, available available residential land in Seattle is zoned as single family, basically. And, you know, that getting into a single family home is a heavier lift for a lot of people than kind of getting into some sort of a condo or a strata deal. And so I think, you know, we're missing a big component of housing, just for sale housing that I think Canada has passed. You know, I think your laws are a little bit different. In fact, actually, a lot of the condo deals that are being built out here are done by Canadian developers, which is fairly interesting.
Excellent. I know sustainability has been a major focus in both cities. Can you talk a little bit about incorporating green building practices into your projects? Like maybe talk about maybe the landscape a bit if you can, and what processes you've put in place in your development practices.
Yeah, I'll start with that one. So the Washington State Building Code, particularly the energy code portion, is already really efficient and moving towards a true sustainability and a true green development pattern. So Washington's already taking the steps statewide to really push for sustainable and energy efficient building. Most municipalities have incentives that allow for greater development potential on a site that we typically take advantage of on most of our projects. Obviously, it's a developer-driven decision because some of those decisions do cost money. But in general, what we see is a very strong interest in achieving those incentives, particularly because the cost of construction is high, the cost of land is high. And any way that we can create more development, even if it costs a little more money, seems to be a good thing to do. And just from a general perspective, I think that the Seattle region just has it's always been the last 30, 40 years, I think, really emphasized sustainable development patterns, avoiding sprawl. And I think that's just been a part of the ethos here.
You know, in thinking about like, and this kind of goes back to one of Corey's comments earlier on just the regulation that exists in our marketplace. And often you'll hear developers express just how challenging it is to get product built kind of soup to nuts. And I know I just had actually somebody mention the other day from the US that Texas seems to be building at a pretty significant pace right now with very little regulation. Can you talk about, is it challenging in the Seattle area to deliver product? And can you talk about the regulatory environment a bit?
Yeah, it is challenging. And I think that's where you're kind of seeing some of those mandates coming down, even from the governor for CEPA relief and things like that, Environmental Protection Act relief. I think when you kind of contrast and compare Seattle to places like Houston or Arizona, they've got a couple things going for them. One, they do have a much simpler process in terms of design review, in terms of environmental review requirements. And they actually have quite a bit more land that's flat, which helps quite a bit as well in terms of creating housing. I think here, you know, the focus on sustainability is certainly not a bad thing. It's a notable goal, but it does take a little bit more effort, cost quite a bit more in terms of building and producing the housing. And it does have an overall impact, I think, just on the amount of supply that we get here in terms of housing.
One thing obviously that's talked about sort of throughout a lot of major cities has been the really challenging and struggling office market post-COVID. And there has been cities that have kind of looked at maybe potentially trying to repurpose some of these office buildings into multifamily rental buildings. Is that something that you're seeing or has been discussed or heard about in the greater Seattle area?
Yeah, there's a lot of discussion about it, a lot of interest about it. I believe the mayor's office has been looking into it. I know we've talked to a number of property owners and developers who are interested in exploring it. And there is some small movement in that direction. The real challenge is finding the right office space, the right building that works, because typically the typical office floor plate is not the same as a typical residential floor plate. And so usually we're looking for older buildings that were relying on older office buildings relying on daylight as opposed to artificial light provides the best opportunity for conversion to residential. And there aren't a whole lot of those necessarily in the right areas of town, but those are the best opportunities that we've seen.
Yeah, up here as an example, like in the Calgary market, Calgary, Alberta market there, there's been some province and city incentives to help people potentially consider looking at that conversion. I do know that I think one was converted and then was later sold. I'm not sure how much traction that has really gotten over there, but I know that's a market that, at least from this side of the border, that it seems like they've been somewhat successful in trying to get people interested in moving things along and actually seeing a few things kind of come to fruition.
Yeah, there was a survey done downtown Seattle office buildings to determine which were the best buildings to potentially be converted. I think I saw that a couple of months ago. None of that's happened yet, but at least a discussion point for sure.
And how about, because I just think like Vancouver, I think right now in North America has one of the lowest office vacancy rates, I think, in North America right now. How's the office vacancy rate been in, and without giving specific details, but how has the return to work kind of post-COVID been for Seattle and for Seattle's downtown?
I think it's been nice. I mean, Amazon, which obviously is a huge employer in downtown Seattle, they've now mandated 5 days back in the office every week. And I think that's made a huge difference in the feel of downtown. I think obviously when people are working from home, you know, 5 days a week or even a couple of days a week, you know, downtowns need people, and they need people to support the businesses to feel lively. And I think we've seen that with Amazon coming back to work. That's been a huge boom for Seattle, the way it feels. But, you know, overall, the office market definitely is still struggling. I don't know the off the top of my head, the exact statistics, but, you know, I don't see any, there's certainly not any movement to build new office anytime soon. And there's still quite a bit of capacity left as Seattle grows in terms of office space.
Maybe a question for you, Spencer, just thinking about kind of Washington and the West Coast in general, where is Grand Peaks kind of eyeing in terms of areas and locations where you're seeing opportunity right now?
Yeah, I mean, so I'm just up here in the Seattle office, and I live in Portland and Seattle, basically. And I think we're still seeing plenty of opportunities in Seattle and even some down in Portland, especially out in the suburbs. You know, as a company, there's definitely a focus on Arizona for us. There's definitely a focus in the Southeast. You know, a lot of the southern states where the regulatory environment is not quite as stringent does create simplicity for us and allows us to have just a lot more predictability in building. So I think, you know, there's definitely a focus on those states.
Speaking of, obviously, you guys have a very bird's eye view of multi-states and stuff like that. There's obviously been a new president now that has now stepped in as of this week. How does that change your, does that impact your view on any of these states? Does it encourage you to do more? Is there a little bit of hold back and wait and see to see how things kind of play out in the first, you know, first 100 days? How much of that new presidency does that impact your decision when you guys are looking to escalate to grow the markets?
A good question.
and we're not talking politics to find out who you voted. Don't worry. We're not going to ask that question. We're just curious, the transition and the change, obviously, to a new president who has a different view on things. How much does that impact your decision making, at least in the short term?
Yeah, I think that the key there is, you know, what is the equity going to do? And I think the equity is actually kind of waiting and seeing what happens as well. You know, my biggest concern, and, you know, nothing to do with politics here, but, you know, if Trump does implement the tariffs, I do think that's going to have a pretty big impact on our construction cost, especially just considering alone that, what, 85% of our lumber comes from Canada or something like that. Yeah, I don't see any benefit to picking a tariff fight. And if that does occur, I do have a concern that we're just going to be chasing our tails for this coming year in terms of cost.
Yeah, no, I think obviously from our side of the border here, and I don't think either country wants to see that happen from, and I think when you look at just the cost that could be shared back and forth with right. tariffs going back and forth, it's just going to impact Canadians and impact Americans in an already extremely high cost of living in most states and most provinces. And it'd be very interesting to see obviously what plays itself out here, but I don't see a winner at the end of the day, because I think the American people lose obviously with regards to cost of living, and the Canadians are going to feel it just the same. So we're right on side there with you.
Yeah.
You know, maybe changing gears a little bit, and I know, Scott, I know you have a lot of background in urban planning and urban design, and as do you, Spencer. Are there cities in the U.S. that you look for that for inspiration, or the other markets that you look at for inspiration, or are you mostly focused on West Coast cities?
We look for inspiration everywhere. We look for inspiration up and down the West Coast, of course. It's very similar to Seattle. But you were mentioning Texas earlier. So one of the driving challenges in development, and particularly in multifamily, is cost, obviously, and utilizing the land most efficiently. And some of the types of construction that we typically do here, the type 5 over type 1 or the type 3 over type 1, can oftentimes be expensive. And a lot of what you see in Texas, and as Spencer alluded to, a lot of flat land there, is they do different types of development, particularly the wrap type development, where you wrap a wood frame building around a concrete parking structure. And we're starting to see some movement in that direction here, particularly on larger pieces of land. So we look there for how to implement that most effectively in terms of delivering multifamily housing. But just anywhere for inspiration, for sure.
I'm just thinking about a couple things. One, is there an exciting project that you're working on right now that you want to talk about?
Oh, well, I'll talk about Grand Peaks Project of a Shoreline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We want to get that one built.
What is Shoreline?
So, one thing that has happened in the Seattle metro area is there's been a pretty big investment infrastructure-wise on light rail. And so we recently have opened up a leg of light rail that runs from downtown Seattle all the way up to Linwood, which is called 20 miles north of Seattle. And all along that light rail is probably about 7 stops all in. There has been a push. Most of the cities along that line have upzoned and taken advantage of the fact there's a light rail stop that's accessing Seattle now. And so Shoreline is the first city just north of Seattle. And along with Tiscarina, we've been in planning for a 302-unit project directly across from that light rail station. So it's a 7-story building. It's design looks fantastic, and we're excited about building it. And we're just at the cusp of kind of getting that going, hopefully this year, kind of just depending on how the economics play out this year.
Just for the people interested in commercial real estate in Vancouver that might be looking at different markets on the U.S. side, from an infrastructure perspective, is there a growth area that you're kind of really excited about?
Well, I think anywhere along the light rail lines, as Spencer mentioned, we have the Linwood line going north, which is going to extend up to Everett. Everett seems to be maybe the next shoreline in terms of interest from developers. I think Spencer would know more about that than I would. But we're seeing a lot of people asking us about sites in Everett, anticipating the expansion of the light rail up there. Light rail going to Redmond. The Redmond link is partially open. The full line should be open sometime the next year and a half, I think. Redmond obviously is also the home of Microsoft, already has a significant amount of people who work there and live there. But now those people are going to be able to commute to downtown Seattle and vice versa via light rail very soon. So really opening up the Redmond market and other east side markets to an exciting opportunity for continued development.
Agreed. I think the other thing that's notable is, Seattle, in terms of infrastructure, has placed a pretty big bet on its waterfront. We removed the elevated highway that kind of cut the whole city off from the waterfront, and just recently reopened the waterfront, but more specifically opened up a direct connection from Pike Place Market down to, a linear park that kind of runs along the waterfront. I'll call it 95% complete. They still got a few things to wrap up, but I think it's transformative for the city in the way people, especially from the outside of Seattle, kind of see and experience and feel the city.
I'd be interested to get your thoughts as us as Canadians would be wondering, how has the Climate Pledge Arena transformation and the introduction of NHL hockey downtown Seattle there, how has that impacted that downtown area?
I actually live really close to that. It's been a big change, not just hockey fans, but it's a great music venue as well. It really has activated the neighborhood around the north part of downtown. It's a very positive change.
What do you think Seattle could do better, Scott, in terms of maybe urban planning and design? Like, is there anything, coming from San Diego, Where do you see some, maybe some challenges or some hopes for the city of Seattle?
I think Spencer mentioned the waterfront. Southern California, San Diego in particular, really embraces its waterfront, its beaches. It's really a part of the identity of Southern California. Seattle has an amazing waterfront, and for too long, it was sort of a almost forgotten or just a location for tourists to go. By opening up the connection from Pike Place down to the waterfront, spending the there was a large effort to expand the linear park along the waterfront up to existing parks to the north, connecting other parts of Seattle with that connection. I think there's a great opportunity there to really sort of continue to build upon that waterfront, really the history of Seattle's waterfront, to really build upon that. And also, I think something really important is Seattle is still very much a manufacturing city and a trade city, a shipping city, and not losing that as well. I think that sort of careful balance you have to maintain between opening the waterfront up for people to enjoy, as well as having the waterfront there for commerce and industry as well. I think Seattle's doing a pretty good job of balancing that.
Makes a lot of sense. I'm just thinking, and I'm just to go back to the question earlier where Spencer had kind of talked about just how litigious it is to develop strata. I'm very conscious of the fact that like the growth of the Seattle metropolitan area, I think I read earlier that there's about 350,000 or so new residents going to be in Metro Seattle over the next decade, mm-hmm. or very close to that. What types of housing, like how are you going to accommodate the growth? And especially if you're not building enough condos and presumably, I mean, like Canadians, Americans, the dream of home ownership is still very much alive. Can you expand? Do you see it more of a single family, or do you see it moving to product like row homes or townhomes, or do you think that the condo market will see an uptick?
Yeah, I'll give you an example. I have a daughter just out of college, and you know, when she looks around Seattle, you know, she does not see any opportunities for home ownership in Seattle. You know, and she's young and she's got a little ways to go before she's probably in a position to even buy a home. But, you know, she's already looking outside of the city because, you know, she's looking even 10 years down the road and thinking to herself, how am I, you know, I can't get into a single family home. That's beyond my price point. And there's just not enough condos to go around basically for the people who want to kind of enter into that price point of housing. So I think it's a big problem. I think that the upzoning that is kind of coming along with the new comprehensive plan for City of Seattle is putting a big focus on new types of housing close to urban, you know, little urban neighborhood cores. And I think that's going to help, but it's going to take a while for that to transform. I think I kind of mentioned before that, you know, 80% of Seattle's zoned residential land is single family homes. And those are hard to kind of transform into a lot of, you know, even into townhomes. You have to kind of amalgamate block, you know, lots and try to get that to work. But, you know, so it takes time. So it certainly is a big problem. I think, especially for younger people trying to get into home ownership.
Well, guys, we really appreciate you taking the time to join us today. And like I said, it was an episode we've been trying to plan for quite some time. So we really appreciate it. Before we let all of our guests go, we have a 6-pack of lighthearted questions we get to ask everyone. So we get to know you a little bit more outside of the office. Do you have just a few more minutes for us?
Sure.
The 6-pack is powered by our good friends over at Redpoint Law.
Redpoint Law, Corey, Tim, Falco, Scott, and the team. These are great people with a wealth of experience when it comes to commercial closings and private lending. And I just want to say, Corey, not to cut you off, they have a perfect 5-star review on Google.
So for all your commercial legal needs, visit them at redpointlaw.ca with offices in Vancouver and now open in downtown Kelowna.
So question number one, and maybe we'll start with Spencer. What is your 2025? Do you have a New Year's resolution?
I kind of had to give up on resolutions. I think at one point I told my wife my resolution was I'm not going to do anything I don't want to do this year, which lasted about 4.5 minutes. She told me to go do the dishes. So yeah, I don't really have one for 2025. I just gave up on it.
And Scott, do you have one for 2025?
Essentially, I'm trying to live a healthier life. I don't live a bad life at all, but the food scene here, like in Vancouver, is pretty phenomenal. And definitely could cut back on eating out for sure.
That's my resolution every year. And like Spencer, I blow mine up within 4.5 minutes because I walk by and I'm like, oh, look at that burger.
A music recommendation, or a favorite artist you're listening to?
Well, I'll throw this out there. I think one of my current favorite artists is a band called Yard Act out of England.
I don't think we've had that one.
Interesting band.
Scott, do you have any favorite bands or music that you're currently listening to?
Well, if I were to look at my library, my phone, it's all going to be 90s and early 2000s stuff, most likely. but the most recent concerts I've been to, I could say would be Future Islands and St. Vincent.
Oh, wow. Okay, wow. Yeah, Future Islands, very distinct dancing style, the lead singer. favorite vacation spot?
Oh, for me, it's pretty much anywhere on a mountain bike. So that pretty much includes most of British Columbia. But yeah, anytime I can be outdoors on a mountain bike, I'm there.
Oh, nice.
No, I'm going to say Vancouver, BC. My wife and I like to head up there for a weekend trip all the time. It's kind of one of our favorite sort of places to get out of Seattle. We like to be urban, like to walk through neighborhoods, and still haven't explored all of Vancouver yet, so we'll keep doing that.
Do you have a front runner neighborhood that you like going to?
Not really. Just like, it's been a while since I've been over to West Van, but definitely like that area over there too.
Right.
Yeah, it's beautiful. North
Shore. Oh, yeah.
All right. Do you guys have a book recommendation? It doesn't have to be real estate related, but it can.
Well, I'll go with a non-real estate one that I just read. I really enjoyed called The Hail Mary Project by Andy Weir. He was the guy that wrote The Martian. Kind of an interesting problem-solving book, if you want to call it that. Just a lot of kind of factual scientific information. It's a really fun read.
Nice. And Scott?
Maybe not a fun read, and a little older, from the mid-80s. It's a book called Cadillac Desert. So I grew up in Southern California, and water resources and water scarcity has always been top of mind for me. And Cadillac Desert's a great sort of nonfiction synopsis of politics and water in the Southwest and West part of the United States and how it really affects the economy of the entire world, really, and how it's really an undervalued resource in the country.
Interesting. Water. Interesting. Last question up, and this is obviously very Seattle focused here. Are you guys going to get the Supersonics back anytime soon? You've got the arena now. The arena's beautiful from what we see. Can we get the Supersonics back?
We'll accept no comment.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah. No comment on that.
Well, thanks for taking the time today, Spencer and Scott. Really appreciate your insight into the market and what's happening along the West Coast. Where can people look to learn more about what you're up to and, of course, Grand Peaks and Tiscareno?
Yeah, our website, grandpeaks.com, probably the easiest resource. So.
Great.
And our website is tiscareno.net.
Tiscareno.net. Fantastic. Well, thanks again for taking the time today.
Thanks, guys. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Thank you
so much.
All right. Take care, guys. Bye-bye. There you have it, folks. Our interview with Spencer and Scott joining us from north or south of the border there. You know, it's one thing too that, and maybe it's just me being really naive. I don't know. But it feels like development along transit routes in BC is like a new trending topic in the past 5 or 6 years. It didn't feel like there was a lot of onus put on it, not as much as there is now. And we talked to them about, hey, where are some really good areas to invest? And they kind of probably thought, well, duh, along the light rail line that's coming in. And yeah. That feels like up here, it's like, hey, we got to put density around transit now. But that's a common sense.
Well, you know, it's funny, but I mean, over the years we've had, you know, at this point, almost probably 100 plus developers on the Sister Show Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. And most have the same advice.
Yeah.
Follow the transit lines or follow the SkyTrain lines, which I will just plug skytraincondo.ca, our new site where we chart and catalog development around the SkyTrain hubs. But it sounds like the same thing's happening in Seattle. Very interesting. I'd actually heard that take before about the so much legal risk around condos that people just won't build them.
Yeah.
What a missed opportunity because of an overreaching legal system, right?
Yeah, I know.
Because, I mean, obviously we've been here in Vancouver have embraced condos. And one of the things that clearly came out of that conversation for me was just how much better Vancouver's downtown is doing, likely because of the condos and the residential components that exist in our market.
Right? Well, when you look at most traditionally downtown cores, and we'll just make a very comparison, say Seattle to Vancouver, and I'm just making up numbers, but let's say, for example, because of all of the residential in downtown, you may only have like 30% of the downtown core, maybe offices, because you've got so much residential. You go to another market, it might be flipped. You might only have like 30% of the downtown core might be multifamily buildings, and the other 70% might be office. And that's where you're probably getting a little bit slower economic growth in the downtown cores because there just hasn't been nearly as many people populating it because they don't live there. They just work there.
Right.
So Vancouver's very unique that way. And that's why, you know, our office market's obviously very challenged right now, like every office market is, but it may not be as challenged as some other markets because we just don't have as much office space in the downtown area because of all the residential and the fact, obviously, the geographical challenges come with downtown versus some other cities. So really, really there. I think one thing I was really surprised with, I didn't realize bringing back the Supersonics was such a touchy subject. Nobody wanted to go there. And I was like, hey, I'm in support and I'm up here. Let's bring them back. But it didn't seem like anyone wanted to go there. And I was like, we got quicker response to the political questions.
You struck a nerve. But yeah. And you also look like you're, I think you got to get back to bed, Corey. This is, I think you're sick.
I do.
Let's get, at least, I'm going to be the scapegoat here and probably I might be off for the next week, everyone. So how can people get in touch if they want to reach out, Corey?
They can reach out to us anytime at williamwright.ca through our website. They can send me an email, corey@williamwright.ca or call our Vancouver office, 604-428-5255, and we'll put you in touch with any office in the province.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 for all your real estate needs. And have a great week, guys.
Thanks for listening, guys. Take care.
Subscribe today.